Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card, offering Ireland's first personalised lending rates.
Time for Tell Me Why with Graham Finlay. If you have a question for Graham, you can send it into afternoon@newstalk.com. Today's question is, do animals know the difference between right and wrong? Afternoon, Graham.
Afternoon.
Of course they don't. They're animals.
That is a long-standing historical view. Descartes thought they were machines, and so that if they made noises of pain or distress, it was just the squeaking of the gears, right? Yeah. They needed more oil. And he did so for not a great, well-founded view, frankly. He did so mostly, well, partly because he thought heaven would get all crowded out if animals had souls.
Yeah.
And since he was a dualist and there were, you got your soul and you got your body, you know, animals can't have souls. However, yeah. I mean, but this attitude has persisted, especially in the way we treat animals. And in fact, there's been a lot of, well, there hasn't been a lot of research into this, probably because, you know, we haven't really wanted to think too much about animals' moral behavior. Mm. So a former colleague of mine ages ago in University College Cork, Mark Rowlands, who's published a lot on this area, in this area, and is now at the University of Miami in Florida for reasons we can only speculate about, has written quite a bit about this, really technical stuff about how animals can act out of moral reasons, right? They show moral behavior, but that they don't... they don't have sort of responsibility for consequences. You know, they're not moral agents. So we can't punish them the way we might punish other human beings who do bad things. But that we should treat them differently if they're capable of the kinds of traits, empathy, compassion, reciprocity, you know, doing something for someone and them doing something for you, tolerance, you know, and following rules. You know, we should treat them differently than if we just see them as machines or stupid people.
Well, I mean, if one could argue that animals have some degree of an emotional life, does that necessarily mean follow that there's some morality there? Because isn't morality to some degree an intellectual idea?
Well, that's the question. I mean, so it comes down, your answer to this comes down to the question of, well, what is morality, right?
Yeah.
Is it this, you know, something which philosophers like me often like to think it is, because I could really know a lot more about moral psychology, notwithstanding what I'm about to talk about. But, you know, which is this highly conscious, reasoned activity which culminates in a perfectly coherent value system where we all do things on the best of intentions because we have absolute free will and are not affected by our bodies or the world in any way.
Yeah.
Right? Or we don't live in that world.
or we're resisting those urges to try and do the right thing, recognizing what the right thing is, or... you're following a set of rules given to you by God.
Right.
It doesn't matter where it comes from, but like, does a kangaroo follow any of those rules?
Well, kangaroos seem to be pretty stupid. I mean, I haven't found any... I mean, this does seem to involve animal intelligence, right? I mean, so I haven't found any examples involving kangaroos. And in fact, one of my more traumatizing things I used to do...
So an actual kangaroo court doesn't exist.
Yeah,
can't have a kangaroo
you
court
could,
because they don't know right from wrong.
Kick you all the time. It'd be really summary justice, really, which I guess is what a kangaroo court is about, right? But no, if you go down to FOTA and the kangaroos are just sort of leaping around, you know, be afraid because they're, you know, you can't reason with a kangaroo. But I mean, ultimately, you know, the other... point of view is, as you say, that morality is ultimately a psychological concept which was selected for through evolutionary pressures as part of in-group pro-social activities which benefit us all by allowing us to survive. And so groups which cooperated better tended to live, and groups which didn't get it together tended to be killed by the first group. So that has a lot of basis, because one of the things we see in animals is one of the things we see in humans, which is we actually see some remarkable in-group behavior by animals. And this includes not just chimpanzees. In fact, chimpanzees may not be the people you should be looking at. And that's sort of one of the prejudices which has held back research in this area. People go straight to chimpanzees who are most like us.
Yeah.
And chimpanzees behave quite badly.
Yes, they do.
I mean, they kill other infants. They will kill female chimps, but it's always on the conflict areas between two groups, or it's new chimpanzees which have lost their group and are arriving in the territory of, say, a whole bunch of female chimpanzees and their mates. And so they will even go to war, right? But it's all in-group and out-group behavior. Nevertheless, people have argued that 90 to 95% of chimpanzee behavior is actually pro-social. They will help each other. They've done studies where they will show them terrible videos of chimpanzees doing all sorts of bad things, killing a monkey, adults behaving violently together to each other, and killing a chimpanzee infant. And then they will look four times longer at the killing of the infant than they will look at anything else. And this suggests that they know that that violates a certain kind of norm about not killing infants. However, they are not emotionally sort of elevated by this sight, and they did that experiment as well. And so, in some ways, it's not happening in their group. So while they realize this is breaking some kind of norm, and it looks a bit like rule following, nevertheless, they aren't too worked up about it because it's somebody else's group.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, again, if we feel particularly good about our morality, we should look at things like the robber's cave experiment, where back in the 50s when you could do this kind of thing, a psychologist got two groups of 12-year-old boys, separated them, allowed them to bond. I mean, they actually didn't meet each other at all, then brought them together for increasingly competitive games over resources. And pretty soon they have to stop the experiment because they're setting
stuff. Lord of the Flies,
yeah. It's Lord of the Flies with teams, right? You know, and it degenerated very, very quickly. Mm. You would never get that through the ethics committee these days. But in any case, and that's in-group and out-group psychology. So we do have strong moral norms about in-group behavior, but as you may have noticed from history, humans can be quite bad to people in the out-group, right?
Yeah.
Not to mention that they also are not so good to each other in the in-group sometimes. So animals have empathy. There's cases of elephants releasing antelopes from cages. There's a case where an older male, a male, you know, in the prime of his life, chimpanzee was helping an older female who couldn't figure out the trick the scientists had set them up to do, which is putting a token in a slot to get food. And so he would spend time, which doesn't benefit him at all, putting the token in the slot. There are rats who, when they notice that, and this is another thing you can only do to rats, unfortunately, you know, rats who, when they realize that they're eating food causes other rats to be shocked with electric shocks, will stop eating. Because they don't want to have the other rats shocked, even though they're not getting shocked.
Yeah.
Same thing is true of certain species of monkeys. Certain monkeys will basically starve themselves rather than lead to the shocking of other monkeys. Rats will free other rats. So there's a lot of this behavior within species and even across species. A gorilla famously saved a three-year-old boy who'd fallen into her compound and presented the boy to the keepers. Dolphins have helped save people. Dolphins also have hurt people, right?
So have gorillas when kids have fallen into their compounds in zoos.
That's also true, right? So ultimately, you know, we shouldn't be too smug about our morality, right?
Yeah, absolutely not. No.
But at the same time, it seems, you know, the objections which are often made to this, which is, well, chimpanzees do bad things, wolves do bad things, right? And you know, wolves eat sheep, you know, and you should put them in jail, right? Or something like that, wolf jail, right? You know, and, you know, that objection isn't quite enough to completely dispute the idea that animals have morality. Again, you can play the same game by looking at children. Children, on some readings, have a sort of natural notion of fairness, and you have to decide what fairness is in an experimental situation. So very small children, when shown, this is an experiment they did, showing them a picture of a person climbing up a hill, and one person helps them, and the other person pushes the person down the hill. Mm-hmm. And they actually, when given the dolls, which were used in the video to choose from, they choose the helpful person, right? And these are children around one or a little more. Similarly, but, you know, three-year-olds, on the other hand, you might see them as amoral little monsters because they, for example, don't look at intention as part of their morality. And there's some really interesting experiments in moral development. So a child will blame a child who breaks three cups doing something children do, which is normal, rather than the child who breaks one cup trying to steal sweets, right? So you get a lot of really, you know, in our own development, you know, moral development is a complex process.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a lot of debates of how that process works, what counts as being fully morally developed. I mean, a lot of theories of moral development really prioritize certain kinds of philosophical theories.
Well,
Kantian moral theory is the final achievement of the human race.
And legally as well, the law recognizes the fact that, you know, when you're seven, you only have a certain amount of legal responsibility for your own actions and et cetera, et cetera. Doesn't some degree of intellectual capacity, isn't that inextricably linked with morality? And many animals just don't have that. And we can cherry pick things and say, well, that looks like a human, but it's cherry picking. Dolphins, for instance, routinely rape other dolphins. That's never mentioned in the kind of nice and, you know, a nice, intelligent, friendly dolphins aspect. Animals do horrific things to each other by our rules, but they're just acting naturally for them.
Yeah, I mean, they've calculated that, say, the intellectual abilities of chimpanzees are at most that of, say, a six-year-old, right?
Yeah.
And of course, we don't put children, six-year-olds in jail and murder, except as the Simpsons say in Texas.
Yeah.
Right? But but you're right. So, I mean, on the other hand, dolphins, killer whales are arguably a lot smarter in some ways.
Yeah.
And they found, you know, the actual structures in the brain, which are quite specific, which contribute to empathy, are also found in whales. And whales, in fact, have three times more of them than we do, right? So they're probably, they just look at these humans and they're just like, boy, are they messed up. You know? Yeah. But they're not responsible for what they do. That's the only thing, you know, we can say, whales, about the humans. But in any case, so, you know, it's an uncomfortable place because we would have to treat animals possibly quite differently.
Yes.
There's been some interesting political theory work about this, about just chimpanzees. There's a famous article called Simian Sovereignty, where people argue, controversially, that the great apes are so advanced, are advanced enough, and in their societies are complicated enough that they should be given territories and self-determination in some particular way, so they can, you know, choose their own paths as a people, right? Just the way we sometimes think that certain kinds of nations do, right? And again, this gets back to, I mean, one of the things I do during the day is teach international justice, where a lot of people are cosmopolitans who believe that morality is essentially about not being biased and towards your own case, and that we have the same obligations to everybody on the planet, right? And that nations and borders have to be justified in those terms. Now that, if you're a sort of hard realistic psychologist, looks like it completely violates the in-group, out-group psychology we've inherited. Right?
Yeah.
So again, the relationship between norms and morals, what we ought to do, and the way we actually behave is also somewhat fraught. So we might explain why human beings behave the way they do, but it doesn't justify it.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas with animals, it seems to be all explanation. It explains why animals do what they do. Now, that said, if you have pets, right, and I hate to go there because I always get a lot of abuse, but, you know, but here's the part you're going to like, right? I mean, a lot of the people like Beckhoff and Pierce, who are the source of a lot of this in a book called Wild Justice, which is a great book. I encourage people to read it. You know, they say, go and spend time with animals. Look at how, say, dogs, wolves, and other canids behave, and then decide whether they're moral or not. Or talk to your dog.
Yeah, well, somebody texted in to say, Kelly said, when my dog does something wrong, he puts his head down in shame. He knows exactly right from wrong.
Yeah, and
now, does he know right from wrong, or does he know, I just did this thing and that's going to get my ass kicked, metaphorically speaking, of course.
This is the debate, right?
Yeah.
Do I not want to be shouted at, right?
Yeah.
But there are a lot of norms in dogs. There are norms in your local dog park. Dogs, when they get together to play, they do a play bow where they sort of bow down as an invitation to play. If you break the rules of play, like you bite too hard, and this is true of coyotes and wolves, right? And you bite too hard too often, you'll be ostracized by the pack.
Okay.
And your survival chances are much, much lower. But you know, there are also certain things you don't do when you're playing. If you're a dog, you don't mate. You don't try to mate with people, and you don't attack them, right? You play, and in fact, dominant wolves will often sort of engage in role reversal. They won't play too hard. In fact, they'll assume an inferior position in play to less dominant ones as part of evening out the sort of score, as it were, to make the play more egalitarian.
Right, yeah.
So the question is your dog reacting to you out of guilt, right? Or, you know, a very different thing, out of shame. It's been revealed that your dog has behaved badly, right? But also out of a sort of moral sense, or is it simply prudential and a deference to the hierarchy? These are the issues which we're wrestling with here. And there's a lot of philosophy going on around it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Again, dogs, on the other hand, also could view you as capable of being guilty of bad behavior. So dogs have a sense of fairness such that if you, they did this experiment, they shook hands with a bunch of dogs, and initially all the dogs were like, oh yeah, well, shaking hands, whatever. and then some dogs, after they shook hands, this is the second round of the experiment, they gave them food and the other dogs didn't get it. And the second group of dogs, the ones who were not rewarded for the handshake behavior, started to act in a very distressed manner, licking and sort of, you know, as if they sensed unfairness. And again, what we find in the psychological experiments surrounding human beings is that this sense of fairness is really operative in all these games where you can share money with each other. And so, you know, people will turn down rewards, right, if they feel like the actual exchange, you know, division of money is unfair.
Yeah.
And it's all, that's basically what is part and parcel of morality, which is sanctions on people, right? That's a way of sanctioning someone who's not sharing appropriately, right? Curiously, and maybe this, so it shows that some more research needs to be done. Chimpanzees, they've had them play these ultimatum games, as they call them. And chimpanzees will take whatever they're given. This is a game where you have a certain amount of stuff, in this case it was raisins, and you can give the other partner as much as you like, right? But that partner can veto it, can reject it, and then nobody gets anything. Mm. Right? Chimpanzees will take whatever they can get.
Yes.
Right? Raisins, no raisins, right? So again,
okay, rule there, never play poker with a chimpanzee.
So again, maybe we should look at wolves, coyotes, and dogs, and not chimpanzees.
Graham Finlay, thanks a million for coming into us. We're going to take a break. After that, kind of a piece of what we've been talking about, is it possible to hypnotize a shark?
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card, offering Ireland's first personalised lending rates.